You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
All right. I'll tell you what, when you do stuff like that, it's always good to have a buddy with you because that kind of stuff can get dangerous. Gene would have yelled. That branch might have fallen on me while I was cutting it. Things are kind of scary sometimes. All right. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the show called Forged in Fire. Any of you ever seen it? Oh, yeah. Okay, it's a pretty cool show. So, this particular show, if you're not familiar with it, I'll kind of explain it to you here sort of quickly. But what goes on is it's a contest. There's usually three, maybe four contestants, depends. And they have to create a weapon of some sort. And so usually what happens is they start with something, just kind of a scrap piece of metal, something that you really wouldn't have much use for otherwise. And they transform it into something completely different. And it's kind of cool just watching the process. Again, this stuff in itself, in its current state, is like, this is scrap metal at best, and you know the price you get for that anymore is worth a few cents, maybe. Really serves no purpose otherwise. But they start with a scrap piece of metal, and they have what's called a forge, where it's basically a furnace of sorts. It's oftentimes fueled by propane or coal. Seems to be the most popular choice of a fueling source. But these things, these forges get anywhere from about 1,100 to 3,500 degrees. So they're really, really hot. Okay, and we all know metal in its natural state, cold state, is pretty hard. Okay, as strong as I might think I am, I can't bend this. It is really hard. Typically, if something hits this, the other thing's probably changing shape, not the metal. All right. But the cool thing is they use these like big tong looking like things, and they put their metal into this forge and they heat it up. And depending on the forger that they're using, you can see the metal will actually start to change color. It'll start to glow a bit. Get this reddish, orangish, kind of yellowish glow to it. And at that point, the metal's starting to soften. And so they'll pull it out, and they'll put it on an anvil, and they'll start pounding it. And they'll start changing the shape of this metal. And eventually, you know, whether they've been tasked with creating like a dagger or a broadsword or who knows, anything in between, there's all kind of fun things that they make. And it's pretty neat. But whatever they're designing, they get that blade into that general shape, okay, by pounding it into something close to it. From that point, they might grab some grinders or some other tools and kind of really get it into the shape like almost exactly like they want. And then the last part of the process, when it comes to working with the metal part of it anyways, is they sharpen the blade, okay? So there's different ways of doing that. Today, they use like this machine a lot of times with a belt, or they use some sort of a grinding wheel, okay? But they generally put it against some other source, metal source or something that can rub against it. And in some cases, there are also like diamond bits and stuff on some of these belts and stuff that they use. But they sharpen the blade because they want to get the best edge that they can to make that knife or tool or sword or whatever it is most effective. But the cool thing about this show, and the thing I love, is how they take something that was kind of worthless and completely transform it into something new. Like, I don't know, this. And it's awesome to watch that process because this, something worthless without much value, was turned into something that can be used for something. Now, I get it. We don't all use swords today. Okay, this is the day and age of guns and missiles and helicopters and planes. But back in the day, this was a pretty important thing to have. It was a very useful tool. Okay, so let's go with something more practical that we all understand. A kitchen knife. All right? Same idea. You want your kitchen knife to be sharp for it to be effective. Or maybe something else that we can all get. You want your chainsaw to be sharp, okay, for it to be most effective. See, the cool thing is, when we begun our relationship with Jesus, He transformed us in a similar way. He took us in our sinful state. We've been referred to as dirty rags. You know, we had little to no value in our sinful state, destined to go to hell. Okay, because our sin separated us from God. But when we accept Jesus' free gift, we get new life. Paul puts it this way in 2 Corinthians 5:17. He says, apparently I have to go there again because my app is restarting. Paul says it this way. He says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone. The new is here. See, that old life is gone. He's traded it. Sean talked about this a couple series ago, how He took our sinfulness upon Him and gave us His righteousness, right? He changed us. We're not the same person we once were. We now have a clear, defined purpose. And that's to live for Him and to bring glory to Him. What once didn't have much value in us now has value and purpose. So, this morning, the proverb that we're going to be looking at is in Proverbs 27:17. And it says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. So I'm going to kind of sit these off to the side because I want my table. But that's where we're going to kind of jump off from this morning. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens his friend. And the point for this week is wise up and friend up. So we all have friends in our lives. But the question is, what kind of friends do we have around us? Are they the kind of friends that are going to point us to Jesus? They're going to help us along that journey in life. Are they going to help us stay on point, stay focused on the purpose now that we've been designed to serve? Or are they going to do the opposite? So let's consider the kind of friends that we keep. First of all, I want to look at this morning maybe some friends that we need to beware of. Okay? So in Proverbs 16:28, it says, well, actually, before I go there, you saw me out here cutting this morning, and I kind of shared that's something that's not a good idea to do by yourself. Gene was my spotter, okay? See, every once in a while, I have a tree that I want to cut down, or one of my buddies do, and they'll call, we might call each other up and say, hey, can you come over and help out? One, it's a lot of work to do on your own. And two, it's just not a good thing to do. It's not safe to cut a tree by yourself. If I had more time, I'd tell you about a story when I did. And oh boy, did that not go well. Okay. The short version of the story is I literally had a very large tree hanging in another tree. That's, again, you want the details some other time. But it's always good to have somebody there to look out for you, to help make sure you're being safe. Okay, and to help carry the load with you. But again, when it comes to friends, the kind of friends you keep in your lives matter. Okay? So let's consider again some friends that maybe we need to be aware of. So the first one we want to look at is the gossip. Proverbs 16:28 says, a perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. Then we're going to go over to chapter 17 and verse 9. It says, whoever would foster love covers over an offense, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. I'm dying here. I've got to take this shirt off. This is my traditional chainsaw shirt. I pretty much wear this anytime we cut down trees. It's kind of my thing. But it's going today. I'm dying. But it says here that whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. A gossip separates close friends. Listen, this kind of a friend, man, whenever, so here's the deal, and I imagine you've probably seen this in life. There are times where you might be sitting around with somebody and you start talking and you bring up something that happened. And, you know, if you're a concerned friend and you bring it up and you decide, hey, let's pray for this person, fine, great. But here's the deal. There are people that tend to dwell on them and continue to talk about them. And I've seen this. Listen, I've been a coach for, I don't know how many years now, a lot of years now. I've been coaching soccer mostly, a little bit of baseball. And I've seen some girls that have developed some awesome friendships. Okay? But then I've also seen this at times. You'll see a couple girls off to the side, and they start talking about one of their friends. You know, and then fast forward, and you might find one of these friends now with a different friend that they were talking about earlier, and now they're over here talking about this friend. And that kind of a thing, whenever you just talk about somebody to focus on their faults and mistakes, all you're doing, for one, is trying to make yourself feel better. And two, you're putting a wedge in people's friendships. Because listen, when people talk, it comes back around. A lot of times, not all the time, okay? The general rule, again, this is coming from Proverbs, and as Sean told you last week, these are observations of life. They're not hard and fast rules. But most likely, when people do this, at some point it's going to come back. And that's going to cause a wedge to be put in those friendships. It's going to hurt those friendships. Sometimes this happens at work, maybe in your family, when people start talking about other people. It's divisive. It divides people. Okay? So the first kind of friend we need to be aware of is a gossip. We need to be aware of people that are foolish. It says in Proverbs 13:20 that walk with the wise and become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. You probably have heard the phrase, if you play with fire, you might get burnt, right? Or something along those lines. The idea here is if you spend your time with foolish people, there's a good chance you're going to get yourself in some trouble. Okay? So people that are doing things that just aren't wise on a regular basis, it's not a good idea to constantly be spending time with them, because there's a good chance at some point. Listen, you can play with fire a couple times and maybe not get burnt. Okay? But the more you play with it, at some point, you might get burnt. Again, that's the wisdom here. The kind of company you keep matters. Okay, so the next friend you want to be aware of is those that are hot-tempered. Proverbs 22:24 says that, don't make friends with a hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself in trouble. I'm going to confess a little bit here, and I think many of us could relate. I have been one. So James says that we ought to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. I love the verse because I need it, but I'm not very good at it. And over the years, I've been one that at times has been quick to speak and quick to get angry and slow to listen and process before I react. And here's the unfortunate reality. And again, I get it. That there's probably many of us that can relate to this. But my quickness to react and to speak and to get angry at maybe one of my kids' mistakes or something like that has unfortunately, and mind you, my family, I live with them, they're around me a lot, it rubs off on them. And unfortunately, I see it in my kids sometimes. I see them get angry and then I think, that's me. I rub off on them. And the reality is, if we spend time and keep company with people like that. Now listen, I hope I'm not the exact person that's being talked about here. I hope my temper's not that bad. But I can tell you, I know some people that I think they live for being angry. It doesn't matter what you do or what you say. Man, they get angry at about anything that isn't perfectly the way they want it in life. And again, I've been around some people like that. I know a few people like this. And I can't imagine being like that. But that, if you keep company with people like that, chances are these individuals' friends are similar. It's going to rub off. So beware of friends that are hot-tempered. Another friend we need to be aware of is friends that are worldly. James 4:4 says that, I'm just going to sum it up for you, that friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God. If you spend your time around people that care nothing about what God wants for them or for you. They're going to do things, they're going to seek after things that fulfill their own desires. You know, they're going to seek after pleasures. They're going to do things that have, in no way are they concerned about what God thinks about them or about how you live. And see, that kind of a friend, see, we should be surrounding ourselves with friends that are going to sharpen us. They're going to point us back to Jesus. So what I'm getting at here is just consider maybe the friends that you keep. Maybe think about who is it that you spend your time with. There are certain individuals that maybe you need to reconsider. And what I do want to caution you with, and James here, listen, I've heard some people over the years as I've grown up in church and been different places and heard different teachers teach, pastors preach, whatever. And they take this verse in James to the extreme. Listen, it doesn't mean, listen, we got to be in the world. We have to be able to rub shoulders with people. There are people we need to be, be involved or you know, let them, because they're never going to see Jesus in our lives if we just put ourselves in a bubble. So don't take this to the extreme and take this to understand that, well, we shouldn't have any friends that aren't Christians, okay, at all. No, what I'm getting at is these are the kind of people that maybe you shouldn't let in your inner circle, okay? Because get it, we all have friends, and then we have friends, and then we have friends that we are close to, right? So let's talk about maybe that, we'll call it our second circle. Let's talk about friends and the benefits of having friends. Okay, so we have some friends that maybe we need to be careful about letting in our lives to the point that they could potentially influence us. But we have those friends that are good to have around. You know, listen, God recognized clear back in Genesis chapter 2:18 that it wasn't good for man to be alone. So he had created Adam, was fellowshipping with him, but even God said it's not good for man to be alone. So he created Eve. He created somebody similar to him, somebody who he could relate to. Okay? And little side note, those of you that are married, those of you that are going to get married someday, your spouse should be your best friend. Okay? So God created a best friend for Adam at this point, somebody else that he could relate to, spend time with, live life with. And so God early on recognized that. We're social people. We need people around us. For us to just try to live life on our own, it doesn't go well. Okay? So, and we're going to spend a little bit of time in Ecclesiastes. And Solomon is the writer here. Solomon is the one who also wrote a lot, not all, but a lot of the Proverbs that we'll be looking at over the next few weeks. But Solomon kind of saw the same thing here. In Ecclesiastes, he's been observing a lot of things in life that are vain, that he says are worthless. Things that people do and chase after that are worthless, he says. And there's another one here beginning in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 4. It says, "Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil. Yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. He says, 'For whom am I toiling? And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless and miserable business.'" So this, the idea here, here's Solomon observing this person who says there's no end to his toil. He works and he works and he works and he accumulates wealth. And that's the focus of his life to the point that it says he has neither son nor brother. He has nobody around him. He has no family, no friends to share it all with in the end. So he accumulates all this success, all of this wealth, all of this stuff, and doesn't even have anybody to enjoy it with. And Solomon's like, this too is meaningless. This is something else that's worthless. Chasing after all this stuff and not having people around you. And then he goes on to say, and here's one of our first benefits of friends in verses 9 and 10. It says that two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. So I'm going to give away my age here a little bit. And so back in the day, there was this commercial of this frail little old lady who fell. Okay? And if you know what I'm talking about, when she falls, she says, right, "I've fallen and I can't get up." Okay? Now, this commercial was about this little thing called Life Alert that you could wear around your neck and press a button and somebody would come save you. Okay? But how much better would it have been if there were somebody there with? Okay, this is a funny commercial, but in real life, let's say somebody falls, okay? How much better would it have been if there was somebody there with her, right? Somebody there to help her up or him up. And the idea here is, listen, it's not even just about a physical fall. It could be anything in life. When tragedy strikes, when bad things happen, it's not good to be alone. It's better that if somebody's there with you. You know, when all of a sudden your house burns down, if you had no friends, man, it's tough anyways, right? We know some people that have gone through that, right? Okay? How miserable would that be if you had nobody to come alongside and help? If you were the man that was just chasing after all these things and cared nothing about having any kind of relationships. It says two are better than one. They have a good return for their labor. You know, when I call my buddies over to help cut down trees, we get a lot more work done. A lot more work done than if I were doing it on my own in the same amount of time. And they can help each other. So, benefits of friends, they can give you help. Another benefit of friends, we move on to verse 11, they can give comfort. It says, also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? So, I enjoy the benefits of having a home that has heat. So, in the winter, as we need it here in central Pennsylvania, and it's a 30-degree day, my house is 70 degrees. In the summer, whenever it's 95 degrees here, I enjoy the benefit of air conditioning. So my house is cooled to 70 degrees. So year round, my house is 70 degrees. Okay? So at night when we go to bed, we have our typical bed sheet. And we have a rather thin comforter that we use. And guess what? Since my house is 70 degrees, that's all I need year round. Okay? It works for me. So our typical routine, we'll go to bed. And my wife's setup's a little different. She has the same sheet and comforter, but under her sheet and comforter, she has a big fluffy blanket that helps keep her warm. And then she'll pull over this sheet and comforter. And then on top of that, she has another big old fluffy, you know, the really ones that feel really nice. You know, like these soft, warm blankets. On top of that, that's enough. I look at that and I almost start to sweat. Like, you could be on top of Mount Everest in the middle of winter and that would probably keep you warm. Like, she just, it takes a little bit more for her. And here's the kicker. Our typical routines, we'll sit down, we'll turn on a show and watch some TV as we go to bed. And I'm just laying there without covers even on yet, just relaxing and watching TV, and she'd be like, I'm freezing. Well, she's under all of her blankets. So sometimes I just reach over and put my hand on her belly or something. Helps keep her warm. Sometimes, not every night, we have this kind of understood relationship. Sometimes, as we turn off the TV and go to bed, I will roll over and snuggle up with her and put my arm around her. And it helps warm her up. Okay? It says, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? So, we're a little different in our makeup here. I will roll over and snuggle with her a little bit. And again, this is the understood part of the relationship. She knows it's probably not going to last because I just can't. I will start sweating. I won't be able to sleep. But I warm her up a little bit so that I can roll over and let the blankets do the rest. I kind of help kickstart her heat, okay, a little bit as she goes to bed. So friends can give comfort. Friends can also give protection. Moving on to the first part of verse 12, it says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. So again, I get it. We're in the day of guns and missiles and all this stuff, and we don't, you know, maybe use a sword too often. But back in the day, and when the scripture was written here in Proverbs, when the author wrote this, and for most of history, this was the weapon of choice. Okay? Maybe not necessarily this particular weapon, but a sword is what people would use to defend themselves. And if somebody would attack an individual that was alone, let's say three individuals come up and attack that person, they could do their best, but chances are they're not going to be able to defeat all three of them because their back's exposed. Okay? and they can spread out. And I don't care if you're like even Jackie Chan or Jet Li or somebody like that, like Chuck Norris. I mean, okay, Chuck would win. We know that. But chances are that guy's not going to survive that attack. But add one person. Who do I got out here? Justin, can I borrow you for a second? If I give my buddy, you know, all of a sudden when we get attacked, if we stand back to back, now, and we wouldn't probably be this close when we were fighting, but if we stood back to back, now, nobody, at least between us, nobody escapes our vision. We have a much better chance, thanks, Justin. We have a much better chance to survive the attack at this point. So two can defend themselves and have a better chance to conquer. Okay, that's in another version of this. I think it's in the NLT that says it that way. Moving on, another benefit of friends. So they give help, comfort, and protection, and they also give strength in numbers. The second part of verse 12 said, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. So I don't have time to show you this, but I've seen some demonstrations over the years. If you take, let's say, a typical string of thread that you would use to sew something with, if you would, again, I don't know what the numbers are, I'm making this all up. If you would put like a 5-pound weight on it, like that's about all it could handle. If you add another couple pounds to it, it'll snap that thread. But if you take two pieces of that thread and twist them together, you can actually tie it to like a 15 or a 10-pound weight or a 15-pound weight, and it can hold it. So it's actually, each string now is holding a little bit more weight. If you take three strands of that thread and weave it together, you can hold, again, I'm making up these numbers, but I know it's a little bit higher each time. You can actually hold, let's say, 30 pounds with these three threads together. There's more strength as you put them together. So it's the same with friends. It says a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. A lot of times when I talk to my teams, soccer teams, I share this passage and the idea that as you come together and work together as a unit, it's not easy for anybody to beat you, to overtake you. There's this movie I love. It's a really cool movie, a fun movie, called Facing the Giants. If you've never seen it, check it out. It's a Christian-based movie. A lot of good stuff in it. But I'll give you a very quick version. There's a point where this coach challenges this guy to be a leader on his team, shows him what he can truly accomplish, and this idea kind of spreads into the team. And they talk about building a stone wall. And there's this point in the game, and I know Kara is loving this. She's such a huge football fan, so she's probably out there like soaking this all up right now, like on the edge of her seat. But like, oh, she's upstairs, so she's missing it. Oh, man. Okay, but so there's this point in the game where the team is, they've had a pretty good run up to this point, and it's a big game. They're up by 1 point, I think it is, or a couple. It's enough that if the other team scores, they would lose, okay? This other team has the ball 1 foot away from the goal line. First and goal. So here we are with just 20, 30 seconds to go in the game. This team has all their timeouts, I believe. They get four shots to put that ball in and win the game. And all of a sudden, this guy on the team, he remembers, the coach is yelling out, he's like, stone wall! And he's jumping around, he's getting his team, listen, this is the time. This is what we prepared for. Let's come together. Let's do our job. If everybody does their job, we got a chance. And there's four straight plays. And they're all getting fired up. They're coming together. You see them all. At this point, you see them all. All right, shift. When times get tough, man, they made this little shift. They tightened up their wall. Now it's time. We're going to do our thing. We're going to fight for our brothers. We're going to do everything we can to get through this. And as you might guess, as it ends, they stopped them on all four downs. They made their wall. They came together for each other. The more friends you have to come around you in life when things get tough, it's that much better. See, it's good to have friends. It's just a matter of making sure you've got the right kind of friends around you. Okay? So we all have our friends and our friends. And listen, we all tend to have a couple of really good friends at least, right? Ones that we tend to spend a little bit more time with, that we really let into our lives and live life together. I mean, this could be a couple, 2, 3, 4, 6, 10, okay? But there's a very limited number of people that you spend a lot of time with. and you let into your... I mean, these are the kind of people that you have been through everything together. You've served together. You have hurt together. You have celebrated together. They're the kind of people that when life gets tough, they're there. When things get hard and you need something, they're giving it to you. When things are wonderful, they're celebrating with you. These are the people that you tend to spend a lot of life with. You open up with, and you let them in, and they let you in. Okay, these are the kind of friends we're going to refer to this morning as blade-sharpening kind of friends. So, I mentioned earlier briefly that when you cut, you want to have a sharp blade. So, sometimes when I get out cutting trees with my buddies, here's what happens. You're going along, cutting up the tree, and anybody that knows this, I know some of you are pretty familiar with chainsaws, you've used them often. And when you got a chainsaw with a good blade, you can fire her up, lay that chainsaw on the tree, and it pretty much just does the work, right? It'll just fall right down through as it's cutting and ripping. When you got a sharp blade, it's effortless. You step aside about a foot and a half, you let her go again. Okay? It feels nice. It's nice to have a sharp blade. But here's the thing. After time, as you keep going, just from regular use, you start to lose that edge a little bit. Those teeth start to dull just a little bit. And if you do like I almost did out there this morning, you know, you get some bad ground. Listen, I do this. You're cutting away, and you get those branches that are laying right on the ground, and you don't feel like taking the effort to roll over that big old stump. If you've done any cutting, you've done this. You just cut it where it lies. And so you're cutting, and you run that blade into the ground maybe just a little bit, and a little bit more. Maybe hit a stone or two, and then all of a sudden that blade, those teeth really start to dull. And then what happens? Oh, you keep going, of course, right? And all of a sudden it's taking a little bit. Now when you lay that blade on the branch, it's not just going down through. It's like, what's going on here? So you give it a little bit more pressure, and maybe even like try to change the angle to get it to grip a little bit better. Maybe lean in a little bit more. And you start to get sloppy and unsafe because this blade starts to become less effective. The reality is, we need a little sharpening at times. And God brings people into our life. And a lot of times, not always, sometimes it's some family, whoever, but He a lot of times uses friends in our lives to come sharpen our edge a little bit. So when I got these knives, these swords this morning, I pulled them off the rack to bring them in, and I cleaned them up, and I noticed a little imperfection in the sword. You ever seen a chef take his knives and run them together? What do you think he's doing right there? He's sharpening them. So I had to test that theory. I found this little rough part on my one blade this morning. So guess what I did? I ran it at what I thought would be the right angle, and I rubbed them together, and guess what? That imperfection was gone. And it's smooth. It helped restore that edge back to what it needed to be. See, God brings these kind of people into our lives. And a lot of times, it's not always, again, but a lot of times it's those friends that are closest to us. And I'm going to call these the blade-sharpening kind of friends. So here are some qualities of those kind of friends, the friends that are, you know, we really tend to live what life with and let in. In Proverbs 17, verse 17, it says that a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. And then move it over to chapter 18 and verse 24. And I'm sorry, I didn't warn you earlier. I didn't do many of the verses in the PowerPoint. I kept it simple. So if you want to follow along, you just got to grab your version and try to keep up here. But Proverbs 18:24 says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Blade sharpening kind of friends are loyal. They're the ones, kind of like I said earlier, are there with you through thick and thin. You know, when times get tough and you're frustrated, and, you know, let's say somebody close to you dies, or let's say your relationship that you're in is failing. They're the kind of person that when you want to, you're tempted to get angry and frustrated and lose your focus on the, you know, on God, they're going to come along you and say, "Listen, remember, God brought you through this before, these kind of things before. God, listen, how many times has God come through for you? And they're the ones that are going to remind you. They're going to encourage you. They're going to be there and help you when things are tough. They're thick and thin, good times and bad times. A blade sharpening friend is loyal. They're going to be there for you. Okay? A friend like this is also going to be sacrificial. In John chapter 15, Jesus is speaking here and says that no greater love has anyone than this than to lay down his life for one's friends. And Jesus obviously did that for us. And I don't know if you've paid attention to this, how many times as you're reading through the New Testament, Jesus refers to us as friends often. And as he's sharing here, no greater love does anyone have than this. And he did that for us. He is the greatest friend we can have. But in the same way, the idea here is a good friend, if you're going to be, if somebody's going to be that kind of a friend, they're going to sacrifice for you. That means maybe sometimes giving up their time, giving up their resources, money, whatever, however they can help you out, a good friend is going to do that for you. Another thing about this kind of friend is they're loving. Moving on to verse 14, it says, "You are my friends if you do what I command." And if you go down, you're probably thinking, well, what? Jesus tells us to do a lot of things. In the same passage, if you go down just a couple more verses, it says, "This is my command. Love each other." These kind of friends are loving. And I would encourage you at some point on your own, I'm not going to go there this morning, but go to 1 Corinthians 13. It's a passage that we often pull out for weddings because it sounds good, it feels good. You know, maybe we listen to it, maybe we don't. But I think the world has lost sight of what love is. I think we use the term really loosely these days and have a complete misunderstood idea of what it really is. Because the world tends to think love, again, the world, I'm not talking about all of us here, okay? But the world tends to look at love as sex, things that make you feel good, you know, or something along those lines. But if you read through 1 Corinthians 13, and you want to know what it takes to be a loving friend, read verses 4 through 7, I think it is, in chapter 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. Does not envy. Does not boast. Keeps no record of wrongdoing. Is not easily offended. And it goes on with a few other things. And then it says, you know, towards the end, love always hopes, always perseveres. And a few other things again. It never fails. The idea, love is not making somebody feel good. When it comes to being a good friend, it's not about saying the things they want to hear. It's about saying the things they need to hear. It's being kind to them. It's being patient with them. It's not remembering the mistakes they've made before. That's loving somebody. Okay? And again, we could go through the whole list, but I don't have time this morning. But on your own, check it out. Maybe take a little bit of time to remind yourself what love is supposed to be. But a kind of friend that is a blade sharpening kind of friend is going to be loving towards you and you to them, I would hope. But the last thing I want to look at here for this kind of friend is they're honest. In Proverbs 27:6, it says, "Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." So we have some, as we talked about earlier, friends, right? Some friends look the part on the outside, even sound the part, are very convincing that they're a friend of yours. But man, when times do get tough, they're nowhere to be found. This might be the kind of, quote, friend that when you do fail or you do struggle and thing, you know, life smacks you in the face, they might be the friend that's back talking to all their friends about, "Did you see what happened to them? Can you believe that? I can't believe that happened to them. They should have known." You know, that's the kind of, again, quote, friend that, you know, might look all the part, might be throwing kisses at you, you know, metaphorically speaking, all the time. But it's better that you have a friend that would a real friend that would wound you, that would do or say the thing that might even hurt. Okay? But whenever this kind of friend comes along and they're like, hey man, so I don't know what's going on, but I've noticed your attitude towards your wife has been terrible lately. And you know, and I'm just telling you, I've been seeing this as a friend. I've noticed it. This has been a pattern. It's been going on for a while. I don't know what's going on. Is there something up? I mean, what this just isn't you. And you come along, this kind of a friend is going to try to come and say something that might be hard to hear, but needs to be heard. Okay? It might be, you know, this kind of friend might say, hey, Julie, I see you talking to Joe at work an awful lot. Like, I see you guys off to the side giggling and stuff and spending a lot of time together. I mean, do you think your husband would be okay with this? I mean, I heard you guys went out to eat the other night. Yeah, I just don't think it's a good idea. You know, this kind of a friend is going to say the hard things and try to sharpen your edge and keep you on track and focus for Jesus. James 5:20 says that someone who saves someone or turns them somebody who's wandered from the truth, they turn a sinner from the error of their way and save them from death and a multitude of sins. This idea that somebody comes along and helps get you back on track, they save you from a lot more trouble, a lot more hurt down the road. And if somebody is a good friend, they're going to help do that. They're going to help do that for you. Okay, so I've talked a lot about as if these are friends to you. So what do we take from this morning? As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens his friend. Listen, the one thing I mentioned earlier is I grabbed these swords this morning and I sharpened them against each other. And I could do the same thing. I brought a file in and I'm not going to do it. I have a little tool here I can use to sharpen teeth on my blade or on my chainsaw blade, right? I could do that. But here's the deal. Oftentimes I think people read this proverb and they think that there's one thing sharpening another and that's it. But I think this is a better example because what really happens as iron sharpens iron, one friend sharpens another. Both pieces are actually affected in that process. Both pieces of metal actually change. Because if there are any imperfections on either blade, they can be sharpened off of each other. And it's the same way with friends. Again, if you have the right ones around you, they will sharpen you, and you can sharpen them. So what I would challenge you with this morning is for you to be that kind of a friend. In 1 Samuel, I didn't put these verses up here, but being a good friend means we need then to be loyal, okay? These same qualities we just talked about. If we're going to be this kind of a friend, it means we need to be loyal. In 1 Samuel, chapters 18 through 20 is this beautiful picture of an amazing friendship of David and Jonathan. If you don't know their story, again, check it out. I'm not going to read it to you. But I'm going to give you the short version of it. So Saul was the king of Israel at this point, and Jonathan was his son. Typically, the way things worked with kingdoms back in the day, the son, the first son, firstborn son, was the heir, which meant Jonathan would typically be the next king. God had different plans. God chose David to be the king. And in spite of that, David and Jonathan developed this incredible friendship. And even understanding that, Jonathan was not jealous, was not angry. Now, for various reasons, Saul did not like David. Saul wanted to kill David. Saul just had his issues with David. We'll keep it short and sweet here. I'm not going to get into it. But Saul had his issues with David and many times threatened and tried to kill him. Jonathan and David had this friendship that even though Jonathan had every reason to be upset or angry about God's plans, he didn't. They had this amazing friendship. They were loyal to each other, and they stated it many times over. As you read through these chapters, you could see it. So they were loyal. Another great example, again, go read it on your own. The book of Ruth. You can read the story of Ruth and Naomi. Okay? Very cool story. They were family by marriage. Okay? But the husband dies in this story, and Ruth and Naomi, they stick together. This, again, the very short version of the story. They are loyal to each other. So two very cool examples of friends, loyal friendships. Okay? Check them out on your own. So we need to be loyal. Being a good friend also means that we need to be sacrificial. There's a story in Luke chapter 10 that if you've been in church at all in your life over the years, you probably have heard it. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. So Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37, we have the story of this guy who was beaten and left for dead. Left to lay along the road to die. And so we read in the story that there's a priest that comes walking along. A priest would be like, I don't know, our modern day pastor or a religious leader of the time. And so somebody that you would obviously expect might step in and help, right? Not only does he not help, as he sees this gentleman, he actually makes it a point to go across to the other side of the road so that he can completely avoid this person and be on his way. He didn't want to be bothered by it. Next, a Levite comes along, or a temple helper, we'll put it. Somebody who, again, maybe like a modern-day deacon or somebody that helps serve in some way in the church. Maybe a first impressions team leader or something like that. Okay, somebody who serves in the church comes along, and he at least kind of stopped to look and see what was going on, but did nothing about it and kept going. Maybe that was so he could go back and tell all of his friends, hey, did you hear what happened to Joe? He had to known all the stuff he used to do. He had to known that was coming. He had it coming to him. You know, maybe that was the story. I don't know. I'm just making that part up. Okay. But he comes along, checks it out, and then goes on his way. Doesn't do anything about it. But then the next person that comes along was the Samaritan. Okay. Understand the times. Quick version of the story again. The Samaritan was, in this society, was lower class. They were people that were looked at as not equals, not as important, because they weren't pure Jews. Okay, they were the people that, of course, everybody would expect them to do bad and terrible things. What? No. But this is the guy that comes along, and just the opposite. We have the priest and the Levite walk by, but he sees this person, takes the time to bandage his wounds, take care of him, take him to an inn, and then paid for his stay, and then says to the innkeeper, if there's any more costs, when I get back, I'll pay you for that as well. He sacrificed for this person that he barely knew with both time and energy and money. He sacrificed for somebody, for his neighbor. In Acts 2:45, I suspect, if I know Sean, that you're going to be hearing more about this in a couple of months. Oftentimes we tend to, he likes to refocus on why we do what we do here and why MC3 doesn't look like every other church around town. Okay? And good chance he'll go here as he reminds us why we do what we do. And in Acts chapter 2, verse 45, this is talking about the early church. And it says, they sold their possessions and gave to each other as they had need. We need to be the kind of friends that are loyal and sacrificial. There will be needs arise. We don't want to be like the man that Solomon was talking about in Ecclesiastes that just worked and worked and worked and stored up and had all this stuff while we have our friends struggling over here just to get through life because of the tragedy that struck. What we need to be doing is stepping up to help. Be willing to give of our time, of our resources, maybe your money at times. We need to be sacrificial. And that challenges to everybody. Listen, we will all have needs at times. But I would challenge you also to, at some point, if you can, become the person that helps the next person that's in need. Okay? We aren't, some of us, called to help. We are all called to be sacrificial at times. Okay? So we need to be sacrificial. We need to be loving. Again, I'm going to just sum up very quickly 1 Samuel 18:3, and again in chapter 20, verse 17, the story of David and Jonathan. It says in these verses that they loved each other as they loved themselves. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how you love each other if you're questioning what that means. So when you're tired, you go to sleep. When you're hungry, you get yourself something to eat. When you're thirsty, you get yourself something to drink. When you wake up in the morning, you typically clothe yourself and probably wash your clothes, or have maybe get them washed at least to make sure you have clean clothes. If you want to do something, you tend to a lot of times do it. You love yourself. You take care of yourself on a regular basis all the time. It says that they loved each other like they loved themselves. They cared for them like they were caring for themselves. They had this amazing friendship. We need to love our friends in that way. Ephesians 5:2 says that we are to follow the example that Christ gave us. It says, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. We are to love each other as he loved. It says in a different version, it says to follow his example. Okay? We're to follow his example in the way that we love others. Love others as he loved us. And again, we know how he loved us. He went to the extreme. He gave his life for us. Now, what I'm not saying you need to go find somebody that you can die for. Okay? Don't take it to that extreme. Does that happen? Maybe it's happened sometimes. But the point here is, love as Christ loved. Do these things. Be loyal. Be sacrificial. Be loving. And then lastly, that also means that being a good friend means we need to be honest. Okay, we looked earlier in James about how somebody, if you turn them from the error of their ways, it says you save them from a multitude of sins and save them from death. So we need to be honest. It says in James, just a few verses earlier, chapter 5, verse 16, it says, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The idea here is, I would challenge you. Listen, we all mess up sometimes. I did it recently. We were on vacation, supposed to be having this good old time, having a fun game of mini golf, and I had a crappy attitude about something. And here's the thing. We might all be challenged a little bit and think, oh, okay, yeah, I need to apologize. But oftentimes we do this apology, oh, I'm sorry, but. But you said this and it made me feel that way. You did this and that's why I did that. I'm sorry, but like you shouldn't have. Listen, the idea of confessing here is you confess. You own up. You made a mistake. And that's it. Keep your butts out of here. Okay? Your B-U-T's, not your B-U-T-T's. Probably should keep them out too. But anyways, keep your butts out of it. Listen, I'm sorry. I messed up. And I'm going to own that. And that doesn't mean whenever your friend does something to you, or you do something to them. And listen, a lot of times it's not just one side, but sometimes it is maybe. But here's the deal. If you know that in any way you have messed up, confess it. That's it. We don't, again, we talked about love. We don't do things to get something in return. It's not a matter of, okay, now it's your turn. Own up. When you messed up, confess it. Say, you take ownership. I failed. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? And then it says, and pray for each other. The idea here is restore that relationship. Do everything you can. Listen, I get it. It doesn't always work. But that doesn't change the instruction. We still need to take ownership and do what we can to try to restore that relationship. I talked to several people over the years whose marriages are not going well, and I don't know how this happens that people call me up and say, can you talk to me? This has happened recently. I don't have the answers for everything. I will talk to them and give them the best advice I can based on what I know according to the scriptures, right? I can tell them based on what I know and believe. and I can give guidance. And the best thing I always tell everybody, if it's one person, listen, sometimes it's been one person. I don't get to talk to both parties. I'm going to say, listen, I get it that she wants to quit on you right now. All I can do is tell you the best I can. You love her, and you do everything you can to get it right. Admit your wrongs. You know, this is, again, the very, very short version of it. You do all that you can to try to restore that. And if she still doesn't, listen, you can't change her heart. You can't force the situation. But all you can do is do all you can. And listen, sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. That's the reality in life. There are some times that you or your friends or your family are going to be offended and hurt because of something you've done or said. What we need to do is be honest and at least recognize and say, hey, I messed up. I'm sorry. If you would be willing, I hope you can forgive me. I'm sorry. But we need to be honest people, because the hope is that we can restore those friendships. Because listen, we want to seek out, we would love to have these kind of friends, the kind of friends that keep us sharp and keep us on track and living for Jesus. We need to be those kind of friends too. God has designed us to need people around us. It's not good that we should be alone. It's good to have friends that can sharpen each other as iron sharpens iron, to help keep us stay on track. So again, that's what I want to leave you with and challenge you with. As Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens his friend. Think about those people that you have around you. I challenge you to seek out those kind of friends. So wise up and friend up. Let's pray. God, I thank you so much that we could be here this morning and just look into Proverbs. And Lord, there's so much wisdom there. Just as I read through them, and there's so many verses that are just, I look at them as like common sense kind of stuff. There's so much wisdom there that if we would just take it and apply it to our lives, man, it would be so beneficial to us. So God, I pray that you would help us to do that. Help us to maybe consider the people that we invest our time in. Lord, if they're the ones influencing us in the wrong way, I pray that maybe we would pull back, pull away from that. And remember what you've called us to. Remember where we should have our focus. And that's on you, Jesus, and bringing glory to you. It's not about what we can get out of life. It's about living for you. Because God, you've created us and transformed us into something new. You saved us from our sinful state. And you've given us a new purpose in life. And God, we need help to stay on track sometimes, because sometimes we're just going along, doing our thing, doing great, and then without even realizing it, we start to lose our edge. And all of a sudden, those things that we were doing effectively, it's just not the same. And God, so we need people like that. Lord, bring them around us, and God, help us to be that kind of a friend to others. That we would be the kind of person that would come alongside somebody and say, listen, that's not that important right now. What you need to do is just, listen, get your focus back on Jesus. Help us to be that kind of a friend, that we would always point others to you. I thank you, Jesus, for being the perfect example of the ultimate friend. God, you did what nobody else can do. You suffered and died to show us how much you loved us. You sacrificed for us. You have given us your word. You've given us truth to help guide us along and to show us how to be a good friend. So God, help us to be that. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.